All right, hi everybody, and this is going to be program number 59 for externalization of the hierarchy. I'm trying not to lose any more programs. You know, it's a bit of a heartbreak after you concentrated hard and done your best, and then you find that it's suddenly gone. The computer ate my homework. Okay, well, however, usually the second time around, it's better, so I'll just have to content myself with that. Well, we're on page 519, and we're dealing with the externalization of the ashrams. And we've jumped, you know, I think from 1919 to 1946, 27 years. At least this section began with 1919. So, okay, I've got a conference coming up, conference call, and I'll try to do another hour now. January 1946, the externalization of the ashrams. In, I wish I could... Well, it's going to be a little dark. Off to the side. A little dark. And that's just the way it is. In these words, I refer to an aspect of the amazing enterprise upon which the hierarchy is embarked within this cycle. Which cycle? Well, there are so many cycles, and we don't know. Is it the simply the equinoctial age of some 2,500 years approximately, or 2,160 years, a little more exactly perhaps, without the overlapping periods? Or is it the big 25,000 Platonic year? You know, the big age of Aquarius with the age of Pisces coming to a rapid conclusion now, at a time which our particular science cannot determine. He told us that, you know, he says, well, you know, you're looking for the date when the great age shall begin, the age of 25,000 years. And your science cannot figure that out. So the hierarchy is involved upon an amazing enterprise. Its appearance, expression, and activity upon the physical plane for the first time since it withdrew into the subjective side of life and focused itself on the mental plane, I suppose, rather than the outer plane, instead of the physical. During the days of ancient Atlantis and after the war, between the lords of the shining countenance and the lords of the dark face, as the secret doctrine calls it. Well, you know, it's a bit like watching Star Wars and the discussion of the light side of the Force and the dark side of the Force. Lords of the Dark Face. There was the name of one such lord. I can't quite remember it, and it's probably not even wise to deal with it, but he was called the demon of the Atlantean days. He was probably a giant of some kind, as they had a huge stature in those days. And somehow I think that's in Blavatsky's writing. It's kind of blood-curdling, and you know, don't want to get too close to it. As he says, speculation anent which, that is, about them, is both fruitless and dangerous, profitless and dangerous. For millions of years, as the result of the triumph of evil in those days, and it's the first time he really says so, that even though the, was it those days, there was the sinking of parts of Atlantis, and it seemed that there was a kind of mesmerism which kept the leaders of the Dark Face from reaching their Vimanas, their flying machines, in time to save them. But we have to keep clear whether we're talking about the Battle of Kurukshetra, maybe some 4 million years ago. Again, Philip Lindsay would have better dates. Or whether we're talking about Daitya and Poseidonis. We're talking about a more recent sinking. There were a number of these floods, you know, during that Atlantean period. And in one of them, it seemed that the hierarchy had prevailed. But anyway, the result of the triumph of evil in those days, the hierarchy has stood in silence behind world events. Again, you know, it's like when they were packing their bags recently in 1942, because it looked like humanity would go down to defeat. There is some kind of mystery in that preparing to vacate. And it obviously has to do with the welfare of the planet and leaving humanity karmically to work out its own destiny and, as a result, improve. And because all that hierarchy had done up to that point did not lead to sufficient improvement and the ability to ward off the great Atlantean war, in which men participated, but of course the lords of the Dark Face were on the attack. So the hierarchy, you know, for millions of years, as a result of the triumph of evil in those days. Now, sometimes he seems to say that, and other times not. Okay. So, they've stood behind world events, occupied with the following work, a work which will eventually be carried on exoterically instead of esoterically. So it's not that they simply withdrew into some kind of uncaring attitude. They were busy helping in the best way possible. Whatever they do is always done in the best way possible. Okay, so number one, the hierarchy stands as a wall between humanity, you know, the great defending wall, between humanity and excessive evil. They have to allow some karmically to enter, and there's certainly a difference between planetary evil and cosmic evil that pretty well wants to annihilate the planet. As Madame Rorick said in one of her letters, you know, using the word Satan in the negative sense, she says that Satan wants to promote a great explosion on the earth and float away on the wreck. It's hard to get those words out of one's minds, especially the word wreck, you know. So anyway, guarding from excessive evil. Forget not that as humanity is thus protected, that protection extends to all the subhuman kingdoms, of which the fourth kingdom, the human, is the macrocosm. The excessive evil emanating from cosmic sources, and these are sources that involve the cosmic astral plane, requires the trained skill of the hierarchy and the fiat of Shambhala to prevent it flooding over disastrously. And I guess What we learn here is that humanity really can't handle cosmic evil. That is the task of Shambhala, and we just have to be humble in that regard. It's just beyond us. Maybe planetary evil, about that we can do something, but I don't think we're so very skilled at it just yet. But the great defending wall, you know, stands as a wall, and can I put that in? The great defending wall. What does he say, like unshatterable steel or something like that? So that withdrawal was positioning themselves to protect humanity. We can be sure that no type of disregard or carelessness or cowardice is involved. And the excessive evil is deliberately chosen evil against the divine plan, which cosmic evil seeks to discover. They want the details so that they can thwart the six leaders in the East, more experienced than the six leaders in the West. He calls them leaders, and notice that there's a 12, just the way the Christ had 12 in his ashram among his disciples. And you kind of wonder, is there a particular leader of these dark forces? Again, speculation anent, which is both fruitless and dangerous. All right, so we're dealing with the withdrawal of the hierarchy, apparent withdrawal anyway, as a result of the triumph of evil in those days. Like I say, sometimes it seems from the Tibetans' writing as if evil did triumph, not in all engagements did evil triumph. I'm not sure about the Battle of Kurukshetra. It could have even been a kind of atomic war on the plains south of what is now called Delhi. And there have been found melted glass or some strange meltings that seem to indicate that weapons about which we know nothing were utilized. Well, you know, there was a great technology in Atlantis, not because of the people themselves, but because of the higher guidance that they received in the building of these things. And they pretty well carried out what they were instructed to do. Number two here, the hierarchy works constantly at the task of awakening the consciousness aspect in all forms so that it is awakened, expanded, and intelligently employed. So behind the scenes, hierarchy is working, or was working then, they're preparing to externalize now. Behind the scenes, they worked at expanding consciousness. See, they were very busy behind the scenes, but I guess it was time for humanity to take some kind of greater responsibility itself. Hierarchy has been doing all these things since millions of years ago. It was a long wait before the externalization could occur, but the time has come for the entrance of large numbers of human beings into the fifth kingdom of nature. That time has come. Let's see if this is any better. No, it's not really. It's quite dark, and I don't know why, but just let it go, you know. Just let it go. Number three. The hierarchy directs world events as far as mankind will permit, for the free will and free decision of mankind may not be ignored. And what is that all about? The Syrian law of freedom. So that the unfolding consciousness may express itself through developing an adequate social, political, religious, and economic world forms. They give direction, they throw a light, they impress those who are in contact with them, and through the inflow of ideas and through revelation, they definitely influence the tide of human affairs, but they are only allowed to go so far. They cannot impress coercively the center of will. Not allowed to do that. So this they have been doing. They've been directing world events for a long time. I mean, think millions of years. You know, even an equinoctial age of a bit more than 2,000 years seems like a long time and gives scope for a number of incarnations. Now, get to the idea of a withdrawal that lasted millions of years. And that's how long we're dealing with here. Of course, there were the inner rituals and there were inner initiations and all those, but they remain very much an internal esoteric matter. And such will not be exclusively the case in the forthcoming civilization when the first initiation will be given outwardly by the Christ, and to a certain extent, the second initiation proximately to the physical plane. It will not, they are initiations of the threshold, and they will not be so hidden. The hierarchy, point four, the hierarchy directs and controls more than is realized. The unfolding cyclic cultures and their resultant civilizations. You know, you have these, Dane Rudyard called them seed men. They come out with their particular type of genius and they influence an entire culture. These can then provide adequate forms, temporarily useful for the emerging soul of humanity. Everything is temporarily useful. You can't hold on to a form forever. A universe is a form. You can't hold on to it forever. There's an endless progression of universes. And each universe is preceded by an infinite progression, as well as followed. The format of cultures and civilizations receives special attention. So hierarchy sends in its workers, and great artists came in the 19th century ahead of their time, which may be even more now their time, and tried to uplift the materialistic focus on blood and iron, which eventually under Bismarck laid the foundation for the Nazi anti-culture, you know, the materialistic culture, extremely glamorous and egotistical of the Nazis. It has been remarked, why is it that the leaders of Germany at that time, the foremost Nazis, were an ungainly group by enlarged and looked so much different than the Grand Teuton that they had conceived. I imagine some of them had deep inferiority complexes and supplemented those complexes with the imagining of some grandiose blonde beast, you know. But the real thing was quite different than the ideal. Okay, all of this going on during the 4 million years or so that saw the triumph, says the Tibetan here, of evil. Quite shocking. What I had believed mostly was that evil did not triumph, but neither did the hierarchy choose to remain in physical incarnation, directing the affairs of men. So, you know, the evil would again emerge, and I don't know, in the fantasies of the comic books and all kinds of cartoons that children feed upon, you kind of see the arch evil of Atlantean days. Number five, the hierarchy receives and transmits energies and consequent forces from Shambhala, with resultant effects within the hierarchy itself. You know, the connection between hierarchy and Shambhala is not yet complete, even to this day, and also with effects upon humanity and upon the soul of all things to be found in all kingdoms. So some kind of Shambhalic transmission is one of the tasks of hierarchy while they are in a state of apparent withdrawal. You know, they will never do anything that really jeopardizes the lives of humanity and the process of humanity and the process of the other kingdoms. And any imagining that they withdrew and abandoned is simply not true. It's just their own calculation, maybe advised by Sanat Kumara, as to what would work best to lift humanity. Number six, there's quite a few of these, aren't there? The hierarchy receives that esoteric fire of God, which brings to an end cycle, so Ray One is involved. Ray One always begins and ends. Ideologies, organizations, and civilizations when the due and right time comes. So they participate in the ending and I suppose also the beginning of phases of culture and civilization. This they, the hierarchy does, or this they do, in order to make place for that which is better and which provide adequate and not limiting and which will provide adequate and not limiting to the awakening consciousness and the emerging life. Yes. So the first ray workers there are on the destroyer line and they clear the path for a better type of civilization to appear. You just can't keep piling things upon things. And you can only imagine that if we didn't cremate bodies, we'd have a lot of bodies around, wouldn't we? And even, you know, cemeteries these days are considered by the Tibetan to be psychically unhealthy places. Looks like we have about seven of these things that hierarchy has been doing as it apparently withdrew. And the same thing with the Christ. He never left. Of course, he is a more modern leader of the hierarchy. Maybe, you know, different references seem to indicate different things, but even 500 years before his appearance in Palestine, in the Israel of that time, he was considered to be the head of the hierarchy. Then there are the references that tell us about in the temple at that time, at the age of 12, he became the head of the hierarchy. So I think it we there is good reason to believe that when the Buddha left to his position in Shambhala, having taken the sixth initiation, the cosmic initiation, having to do with the cosmic mental plane, that's when the Christ took over. I don't think that we had him as anything less than the head of the hierarchy from that time. And yet there is that enigmatical discussion about, you know, seizing control then in the temple. But then again, maybe it's a question of something about the consciousness of the initiate Jesus and of the Christ and some kind of realization that was involved there as he was teaching the elders. Okay, the hierarchy prepares men for initiation by A, receiving them into the ashrams of the masters where they learn deep lessons, B, offering their disciples opportunity to serve in relation to the emerging clan, which certainly is the training ground for initiation, and C, inaugurating through the means of the disciples of the period those new presentations of the training needed for initiation. For instance, recently it has been realized that the old method of training was no longer entirely adequate to the more mentally focused disciple of the modern age. And so methods of training were altered. The hierarchy is nothing if not adaptable. And, you know, it's filled with adepts, adaptable adepts. Each major cycle receives new forms of the same ancient yet basic teaching. New forms that are suited to the state attained by humanity in that particular cycle. This present one is such a cycle, and much of my own work is in connection with this. Well, there's a very, DK has given a very mental presentation. Of course, it's not without its inspiration. He has a lot of inspiration, but it requires really the use of the mind in a very concentrated manner to understand the deeper aspects of occultism and then to shift from off the path of mysticism. Okay, all of these activities and functions of the hierarchy are well known to many of you theoretically and to some at first hand, which is a good and useful thing to recognize. These activities have all been carried on behind the veil, you know, where the masters, to which the masters repaired after the great battle, after that war, and are, of course, only a very small part of the total work of the hierarchy. Much of it would be entirely incomprehensible to you. However, and it's good for our humility to recognize that, that, you know, we think we can be told all that hierarchy does, but we can't, because they are involved in manipulations, creations, and so forth, energy transmissions, which at our present stage of ignorance would mean little or nothing to us. However, if disciples of this modern world and the initiates can measure up to their present and presented opportunity, playing on words there, it should be possible for all of this not only to be carried forward in the full light of day, but with the, through an externalization, but with the cooperation and the understanding acceptance of the intelligent people everywhere, not just for esotericists, but presented in a way. You know, once I was talking to a guy, you know, he had heard a few things about esotericism, and he was kind of rejecting it. But, you know, I tried to explain it to him, and then later I heard that he said, well, When Michael speaks, I really understand it. Well, I was a little flattered, you know, but not really. I was just happy it went across to him. But there are ways of speaking to people, not necessarily the way I'm speaking here, because here, you know, I know that the people are really students of occultism, but ways of preserving the principles and yet making those occult principles cognizable and understandable. I'm always working on it, and I'm sure that many of us are as well. And, you know, sometimes rarely you get a report that, hey, it might be working. But just try that with your family, you know. And that's the toughest place. And somewhere in the Bible it says the enemies, your enemies are of your own household. Well, I guess that's the best way to bring a degree of harmony into things through long time exposure, because, you know, you have to love the people that you're related to, but you don't necessarily like them. And that was once told to me, you know, I love you, Michael, but I don't like you. Okay, well, I never forgot that one. It was on a Thanksgiving dinner back in the 1970s. And the person who said it was close to me, but I really understood the discrimination. And maybe a lot of us have had that occur, where the people closest to us somehow just don't understand and feel repelled or repulsed by what we're doing, but still the bond of love is there because it operates on a different level. So anyway, one day this will be carried forward in the full light of day, but with the cooperation and the understanding acceptance of the intelligent people everywhere. And of course, that factor of intelligence is very important. DK cares with love for the unintelligent, but he's not necessarily writing for them. And he says it will be a long time before such people are ready for occultism. And also with the devoted acquiescence, though blind acceptance, of the man in the street. Well, this is coming. And, you know, the old saying is that the secrets of the kingdom of heaven will be shouted from the rooftops. Well, then there's John the Baptist as the voice crying in the wilderness, and maybe nobody pays attention, but I think we're in that period where let everybody find his particular rooftop and shout away, because the time for the revelation of the meaning of hierarchy and its coming immediate presence to humanity is a really big issue, and people have to be prepared for this. So, you know, basically we're told that evil drove back the forces of light. Whether this was so or not, or they just considered it wise to go behind the veil where they could accomplish more, we've seen seven kinds of activities that they are engaged in, and they were the activities of the past millions of years, with different cycles coming in where different experiments were tried. And if that was a defeat, then there were other victories along the way for the lords of the shining countenance, or, you know, for the forces of light, some victories, and victories for those who represented them. Okay, we're on page 521, and we began at 519. Is that possible? Maybe not. Talking too much here. Okay. Something of this, something of the new activities which will be brought to the attention of disciples in physical bodies, something of the scope of the undertaking of externalization, something of what all of you can do to prepare for this major change, and something of the tremendous difficulties involved. You know, don't forget, we're entering the Aquarian age. under Saturn, the ruler of the first decanate in general. Some may also have that Venusian entry, which will be affection of a lower kind. Something of all these things I am seeking to convey to you if I can. So the Tibetan is a great realist here. He just knows that we may repeat the words, but do we really absorb the principles? That is the question. One of the things now occupying the attention of the masters is the externalization of their ashrams on the outer plane. This is preparatory to later envisioned developments. If this can be done, in the five planetary centers at first, New York, London, Geneva, Darjeeling, Tokyo, if this can be done, then other developments may be possible, may. An extension of the ashram is desired. And use Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, to attract into the ashrams, he says. It was with this new view that I inaugurated a new activity in May 1941 and chose so many of my disciples resident in New York. Basically, the 14 rules were written for this group that he's talking about here, and they met monthly under Alice Bailey's supervision, what is ashramic life. I also began to give out the teaching on the stages of discipleship. Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1 and Section 3, the six stages of discipleship, and suggested that the group members meet together for one full afternoon, it was after all New York City, around the time of the full moon each month, and around, not being too exacting, that it has to be at the minute, and to do this in a quiet and unhurried spirit. I desired that they spend the entire afternoon in conference, mutual understanding, discussion of group problems as these affect group service, and above all, make an attempt through deep united meditation and the pooling of knowledge to approach closer to the hierarchy. This would aid them to work together as a group for world aiding and to do it together. I asked them to study the relation which exists between a master and his disciples. Well, okay, there were a couple of different things going on there. The manual for initiation, maybe we can say not just initiation of the threshold, but real initiation, the third degree in discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2. There were the 14 rules for disciples and initiates. And when it came to the 14 rules, it was particularly focused in a group in New York. But when it came to the initiatory manual and Dyna 1 instructions and Dyna 2 instructions, quite a number of the people were spread across in the group of 24, the new reorganized seed group, as it was called. Because, after all, they were... found, resident in different states, and those days you couldn't just travel, and you didn't have the internet, and the telephone was not practicable, So basically, one was a distance project, although some probably lived in New York, and the other was an in-person project. And I seem to remember that he specifically was giving out the material on the 14 advanced rules to this group that was meeting for the entire afternoon around the time of the full moon. And under Alice Bailey's direction, she was an experienced ashramic worker, and she probably straightened out a lot of misconceptions and helped people work more closely in a way that reflected ashramic life. These groups, indicated for externalization, exist on the inner side as part of the one inner group, and they must be externalized for service purposes. Well, is he talking of the C groups here, perhaps? They certainly exist inwardly, and a greater percentage of the affiliates of such groups are on the inner side. The fact that this externalization is possible indicates certain developments which are the result of the past, of the unfoldment of humanity's developing powers to recognize capital R reality, of the invocative cry of the masses everywhere, plus the directed invocation of the spiritual people of the world and the effect of the World War. This is written in 1945, from 1914 to 1945. All these factors have wrought a great destruction in the materialistic world. He didn't say necessarily the material world, but the materialistic world. It's a glamorous thought form. And have produced a very real expansion in the human consciousness, also, as one of the masters, unknown to you, remarked at a meeting of members of the hierarchy a few weeks ago, quote, "One of the gates is open. Those who are ready can come in, but we now can go through it also, and can go to them in a new sense and more directly. May Shambhala help us." Wow. A master unknown to us. Okay. Well, I think, you know, there are so many masters unknown to us, and DK says that in his ashram, he actually has five masters working. You know, is that because he's in the 2-sub-3 ashram, which supervises 4, 5, 6, and 7? And maybe another sort of third-ray tending master. But this is emblematic of the wish of the hierarchy to reach humanity. And the reason why all of this is possible, the past, the powers to recognize reality, the invocative cry of the masses, plus the directed invocation of the spiritual people of the world and the effect, the cleansing, devastating, beneficently destructive effect of the World War lasting, according to this enumeration, 31 years. Yeah. 31 years. And of course, you know, humanity is caught in somewhat superficial perception. And so that in the roaring 20s, that war went underground and nobody would think that it was still raging, but it was. And Master Moria recognized this, of course, and advised his students to recognize it, that the most horrible rituals were being perpetuated and dark occultism was at work behind the scenes. And when we read some of what was going on in Germany at the time, you know, murder and torture and all that kind of thing, as the rising Nazis fought those who had the more communistic leaning. Pretty horrible stuff. But of course, it was a question, I think, of karma as well. It is going on here. It is realized by all in the hierarchy that the major test connected with the higher initiation confronts them. Well, as I said, in the triangles that we see between Shambhala hierarchy and humanity, the link with Shambhala is not yet completed, Shambhala and hierarchy. Disciples should attempt to realize the tremendous sacrifice involved in this outward move of the hierarchy into secular existence. Well, I think we don't. And maybe we take it as for granted. But of course hierarchy would do this and move outward to help us and the other kingdoms of nature. But I've always suspected, and probably you have too, that a tremendous sacrifice is involved in the outward move. I mean, we're even told that when the Buddha has been coming for 8 minutes every year to the Waisak Valley, whether he is doing that now or not, a tremendous sacrifice is involved in so doing. And probably we do not have the notion of why or how this sacrifice is exacted. The higher the state of initiation, the harder it will be for the initiate concerned. He really has to bring his vibration down to intolerable spheres, intolerable to the highly sensitive. It is, for instance, less of an effort for me to contact you than it would be for some of the Chohans, such as Master M and KH. I am nearer to you because I am still utilizing the same physical body in which I took the fifth initiation, 1875, nearly 90 years ago. Okay, 70, 75, 45, and whoa, that's interesting. 45 and 25, we have 70 years. But he says 90 years ago. No, this is 1946. Yeah, that's right. 46 plus another 25. We have 71 years. And so why does he mention 90 unless something happened then which concerned his fifth initiation? So this is very interesting. And you certainly do have to compare these different references that pop up and say, well, why does he say 90? Because 90 would be, we usually hear that he took the fifth initiation in 1875, but we'd have to go back to the 1860s, almost, or even the 1850s. Let's say 1855 to 1945 or 46, or maybe, 1857. There's some mystery here that's being given to us, because I'm pretty sure we can find the reference that indicates that Master DK took the fifth initiation in 1875, the same year the Theosophical Society was founded. So what is the answer? Well, let's ponder on this, as they say. We'll ponder on this. Chohans have taken a still higher initiation and are focal points of powerful ashrams. Their task of adjustment is very much harder. Adjustment to the lower worlds, right? And rarely think about that. Think about the Chohan Master KH showing up one fine Sunday morning into the study or library or wherever Alice Bailey was at that time when the families had gone to church. All right, well, there is that appearance making it difficult. But it was all part of the plan. And what I hear on good authority is that Alice Bailey is very much KH's secretary now within the ashram. So we do hear that, of course, you have to pass the secretary before you can reach the master. So we'll probably be seeing her again if she's not the amanuensis of the coming teaching. Anyway, it's harder for them, the Chohans, to materialize to the point where they can be effective on the outer plane. Their invocative appeal to the Lord of the world in his council chamber as Shambhala has been mounting for some time. It has been called the appeal of alignment because the members of hierarchy feel and know that this great return to earth, which has been arranged for hierarchy after so long an absence, millions of years, will call for a fuller expression of the spiritual will than even they realize. I mean, and I, you know, this takes us back to the Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane, where I think, you know, the implication was that he was appalled by the vision that caused him to say, "Not my will, Father, but thine be done." And somehow DK had said that the Christ had already worked out a means of helping or saving humanity, but what the Lord of the world demanded was even more demanding than the great effort the Christ was ready to meet. Then he just had to accept out of obedience what was revealed to him so that he could take the monadic initiation, the sixth initiation. I suppose with its touch of the cosmic astral plane to a certain extent. Okay, so even more than they realize lies ahead for them, and they sense that it's coming, you know. They know that it will require the cooperation of Shambhala as well as the cooperation of humanity. So if the Christ is appalled, as the Tibetan says, when presented with the need for the salvation of humanity, which must present to him no very appealing prospect, we can imagine that kind of take your breath away realization must also apply to masters who will be externalizing and who will come to understand just how demanding the process is. What I have to say about the externalization of the hierarchy and the ashrams could well be divided for the sake of clarity into the following points, which will form the basis of the instruction. And he's always so good with the fifth and seventh ray too, to keep things clear, and we shall attempt to follow this outline. So what is it? Hierarchical adjustment and alignment. Adjustment may be to what humanity is doing and that which of which humanity is capable, and alignment with Shambhala within itself. Hierarchy's adjustments within itself in connection with the council chamber of Sanat Kumara. Little can be said about this, but it's an alignment and in relation to humanity. And you will note that this involves the three planetary centers. So we'll learn something about this in a little while. I'm not going to go on right now because I have a board meeting, you know, the mundane does demand attention. Otherwise, we couldn't get it through to all of us who live on the dense physical plane and focus there for the most part. So three different points, the following points, okay, and then the hierarchical preparation at the Wesak Festival. Oh, maybe there's more than three here. The mode of approach towards externalization. Approach via certain ashrams, one, two, and five, particularly at this time, in the consciousness of the disciple, in physical expression, and through dissemination of information of a preparatory nature. Lots of things here to be covered. The externalization itself, and this involves the return of the Christ or the reappearance, the ashrams concerned at his coming, the organization of the implicated ashrams into due form on earth, the externalization of the ashrams, adjustment of the ashrams and the masters to exoteric living. So the term adjustment is applied to outer exoteric living. It will involve also adjustment by disciples and aspirants to the increased stimulation and the enunciation of certain basic statements. So adjustments above as well as below. And then the work of the externalized ashrams. I'm losing track here of how many of these requirements there are, but hopefully that will clarify. The work of the externalized ashrams, creating and vitalizing the new world religion, the gradual reorganizing of the social order. One can feel it on the way. The public inauguration of the system of initiation that lies far ahead, and when the Christ does return, I'm sure, I feel it cannot be anything less than 100 years and maybe more. The exoteric training of disciples and of humanity in this new cycle. So maybe when I pick this up again, I'll try to go through this because I don't find this as clear to my mind as it might be. 523, so 519 to 523. So the three planetary centers are involved. Following points are involved. We have, changes in relation to hierarchy. No, in relation to Shambhala, and then hierarchy within itself, and then in relation to humanity. All three planetary centers are involved here. And then quite a few things are listed. Yeah, quite a few things are listed. Now, maybe I'm finding it a little difficult to differentiate these factors. And, here's sort of the first one, preparation for the Wesak Festival, then the externalization itself. And this involves all of these factors, and then the work of the hierarchy once it has externalized. And New World Religion, social order, the giving of initiation publicly, the training of disciples and of humanity in the new cycle, all these things. Well, so maybe we come up something with three divisions, and we can see that hierarchy has certainly laid out for itself a very ambitious program. So 523 is where we are, and you know, this will be another one of those sort of hour programs. And, you know, and this whole section we're in right now is the externalization of the ashrams from 519 to 523. Yeah, that's it. So we will take this up when next we can. And we're going to end here at number 59. And it's, maybe approximately 1 hour. And I don't know, maybe 3 minutes. And from 519 to 523. And this is the 25th. And we'll begin with program 60. You know, every time you reach a 10, it feels like you've accomplished something. And 1 hour and X minutes, we don't know. And it's 519 to XXXX. 523 to XX. We don't know, and we don't know the date at which this will be undertaken. But it is really interesting, all these plans that are being laid in the most exacting detail and yet with great flexibility and adaptability, because even hierarchy doesn't know how humanity will really respond to the proffered opportunity. Okay, friends, got to get ready for a board meeting, and I'm just going to say we will stop the recording. Many blessings, lots of love, and then end the program. Okay, see you then soon for program number 60. Okay, stop recording.